This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Ollie Gallant and Si Alexander on FUBAR Radio.
Ollie and Simon here as we take a look back at the last 7 days on planet Earth. If this was an American TV show, it'd be the new season.
That's true.
For 2016. I mean, I don't know if it's as hotly anticipated as Game of Thrones.
Well, in my head it is. But
I know it is in yours.
On New Year's Day, I sort of sat down to a few films before a long walk. Very New Year's Day sort of day. It was lovely. Rewatched. I saw it about 6 months previous, but I watched The Imitation Game. Have you seen that yet?
Yeah, I watched that on a flight to Greece in September, but I'd taken quite a large amount of lorazepam, and anybody who suffers from anxiety will know that it does give you temporary amnesia.
Right, so you can't really remember.
Well, I know the story so well because my dad took me to Bletchley Park a lot as a child.
Oh, that's nice.
That I've kind of filled in the gaps, some with Benedict Cumberbatch, some without.
Yeah. So for those of you that have never heard of this before, very briefly, The Imitation Game is based on the true story of how a small team at Bletchley Park, near Milton Keynes in England, basically played God during the Second World War. The Germans had the Enigma machine, which were based on boats and aircraft and military bases across Europe, where they would send radio signals with a bizarre code of gobbledygook, letters that made no sense. But when they typed those letters into their Enigma machine, another letter would light up. So if I press P, I might light up, or O might be Y, and that would spell out messages and codes so that they could plan attacks, times of day, positions of boats and things to be in. But it was indecipherable to the British and to loads of other countries across the world because it was gobbledygook. And not only, you know, P might have been I on one day, but the next day all the settings would change again and again. Every night. Excuse me. And it meant that technically on that Enigma machine there were 14 million possibilities of what each word was or each code was. And the team at Bletchley Park in England had to try and crack these codes, and they had mild success, like, after, you know, trial and error, which took forever, because, well, 14 million possibilities. They had minimal success, but then this guy called Alan Turing came along, who Benedict Cumberbatch plays in the film The Imitation Game, who designed what we now know to be known as the computer. They didn't know it was that then, but it basically designed the computer, which cracked the code. And this was a massive machine that filled a room. It was so big. It was like 10 feet tall, really deep. And in fact, they allude to this in the film, all of the wires in it, the interface, it was like a human body. The wires coming with like the veins and the arteries and the face, it was like a big human body that they created. But it was the first ever real computer and it cracked the codes. And what this meant was that they could anticipate every single movement of the German military.
Now, Simon enjoyed the film so much that the next day, Simon and Hayley then drove to Bletchley to go and look round.
Yeah. And well, I'd seen the film before, and we were watching it with Hayley and her sister, who'd never seen it. And they were both so excited. It was actually Hayley's sister's idea to just go, let's go tomorrow. It's open. We can go. So we did.
And we were saying off air about the posters in the...
I know. It was bizarre. So when you go to Bletchley, it's really hard to describe, but actually, the main house... for those of you that are in England, looked, well, and in America or whatever, Downton Abbey sort of style house, like a big grand house. It's very traditional. And in that house, what would basically happen is meetings, board meetings, lots of drinking, lots of socialising, very lavish environment. But then surrounding it on the same park were loads of huts and workhouses, where it was still a nice environment to work, but that was where they got down to the nitty-gritty.
There was about 20,000 people coming in and out of there, and
it's
not
crazy.
Even the people in the surrounding villages knew what was going on.
Well, they just thought it was a radio factory, and that's what they said. Oh, it's a radio factory. I'll work at the radio factory. Oh, it's boring.
Never got bombed.
Never got bombed once. I mean, they did a lot to stop that, because they built walls around the huts so light couldn't be seen. But it was just a fascinating thing, and they've preserved it all. They've given it a lick of paint, but all the rooms and everything are exactly as they were. They put desks in position, and above some of the workbenches, they had posters, period posters that were used to encourage them to work harder. And it was so weird looking at them, considering, I mean, we work in radio stations and stuff. It's just like... 2016, sorry. I mean, we just got no stresses.
Consequence is low.
Very low consequence. Even if I swear, like, or whatever, it doesn't matter. One of the posters above a workbench I saw there, now these are people that daily are cracking German codes. If they crack the code, they could go and anticipate the movement of a U-boat, destroy it before it kills British soldiers. And on this poster it says, 10 minutes wasted, 10 people killed in the field. And I was just like...
Imagine sitting back down with a cup of tea and a Kit Kat.
Yeah, just like... Or you just, oh, I'm just going to read the sports section of the paper over a sandwich, and then you look up... 10 minutes wasted is 10 minutes. That pressure to just constantly... Well, I drive myself mad.
Now, here's an interesting thought. The end point of this was that Alan Turing and his team managed to... The machine managed to crack the code. Mm-hmm. The dilemma they had then was that they had... The small room people went, OK, brilliant. And all of his helpers then went, quick, let's tell everyone that let's get it to the go. And he went,
yeah,
no. Because if we just turn around and start blocking attacks or stopping convoys or attacking U-boats or predicting where they're going to land or we know where they're going to be and we land in other places, it will give it away too quickly. They'll invent something else. We need to play the long game.
And this was essentially the equivalent of playing a child at football and letting them score a few goals to make it look close. Actually, I equate it to, do you remember the Incredibles movie?
Yeah.
You know, at the end, when the kid who can run 1,000 miles an hour, and they're saying, win? Oh, no, not by too much, not by too much. They had to make it look realistic. And it sounds like we're joking, but for over 2 years, this small team on Bletchley Park knew where every single boat, every single plane, every single bomb was going to go off in the whole of the Second World War. But like you say, they couldn't just stop them all because the Germans would go, oh, they've clearly cracked our system. Let's change it. And we'd be left, you know, back to square one.
So, to the complexity of that, socially, and the weight on your shoulders must be massive. Imagine, I mean, you're pretty good with puzzles and math.
Thanks very much.
Imagine in a modern day environment, if you were on that team, right? It was happening today, and you'd worked out the code, and then you had that responsibility then. Do you think you would have been able to keep it quiet? So, for example...
Honestly, yes.
So, for example, then, I'll give you a situation. You are at Bletchley, in that room, no one knows you're there, you're sort of doing your thing, you go home every night. Yeah. Everyone's involved in the war effort, even Hayley, because now females take part in...
Yeah,
in
they'll be allowed to vote soon.
And they'll also be allowed on the front line soon.
Yeah.
That's all changing in the battlefield. Mm-hmm. It's, even in modern day, there's not women on the front line.
It's mental, isn't it?
So imagine if you got a message in, Hayley was out in the field. Do you know what I mean? She's in France. You know exactly where she is. She's on a boat going over there. You get information in. We've seen the boat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Germans are going, massive ship coming over, full of people, we're going to bomb it. And you're sat there going... Because you can't... Do you know what I mean? You can't just suddenly go, right, let's just stop that. Because this boat's in the middle of nowhere. It'd be totally obvious if you were to reveal that you knew where they were at that point. What would you do?
Oh, God.
Because this is what they would have, on at certain occasions, they would have helped.
In the film, and this, they admitted in sort of the making of the movie.
The embellished about the guy and his brother being on
there.
Yeah,
so in the film, they allude to the fact that one of the guys in the room, who, like Ollie's just proposed this situation to me, he knows of a boat that is about to be sunk, and it contains his brother. And they essentially, not even convince him, they tell him we're not going to. I mean, if I was in his situation, of course I'd protest, but it'd probably be out of my hands. If it was in my hands, I would certainly struggle. I'd look at every possibility of what Because say there are 1,000 U-boats and we can only destroy a couple of hundred before they get suspicious that we know what the code is. I think I'd do everything in my power to make it that we saved that one. I know it's massively biased, but I think it would bring out the selfishness in you, wouldn't it, to go, if we just save that one, we'll let a few others go, even though that's other people's families. I think you'd...
To listen to more of this episode and to catch up on all of our shows, go to FUBARradio.com.